Well, hello and welcome everyone to Let's Grill Jeannie. It's December the 11th. It's our Tuesday with Dave, actually Tuesday with Jeannie this week call. So we want to welcome all new members from the Hawaii and Los Angeles boot camp in the last 2 weeks. Tammy was out of the office for about 14 days. So she was all over the place. She's back today, first time in a couple of weeks. We're going to do a high five to Gino Barbaro, who's from New York City. He just closed a 110-unit deal on December the 11th in Tennessee. The purchase price was $8.9 million. It was a property they were interested in a very while back, but didn't pull the trigger. And just recently circled back and decided to purchase it, and they finally closed it. So do we have an operator on the line?
Hi, Jeannie. This is Lillian. How are you? I'll be the operator
hey,
for today.
Hey, Lillian. How are you? Are you all set for the holidays?
I am.
Good for you. I'm almost, but not quite.
That's good.
Okay, if we have any questions, we can take them. If not, I can read a couple of questions that were emailed in.
Okay, we actually have one right now. And just as a friendly reminder, if you have a question, please press star zero. Star zero for questions, please. Thank you. First question comes from Heather. Heather, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Heather. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Nice to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you again, too. I hope everything's been good for you.
Yes, fine. Thank you.
Good. Good. Okay. So, Jeannie, we have been exploring an emerging market and grooming our brokers. And today I got an email and then a call this morning from my broker who wrote, hey, I have a nice off-the-market property, 16-unit townhouse-style new wood garages. And he said it's going to be around $1.8 million priced at an 8 cap. I don't even have all the numbers on it. Is it something you'd be interested in? So we got right back to him and said we were interested, and would he have financials, which he said, did he have any financials? He said he would send us financials tomorrow. But he says it will move fast. So this is basically, this call is because of my insecurity and the insecurity of my team. We've never put in an LOI before. And sometimes we know they don't send the complete financials right away. Like, you know, sometimes they don't have a proper rent roll or whatever the case may be. So when we listened to Jeff's video on the RE Mentor, you know, he mentioned that if it's a hot property in a hot neighborhood, which it is, and you don't have a lot of time, you know, even if we don't get all the financials tomorrow, should we just put in an LOI just to get in the game? And
well, you can, but make sure you have a backout clause, you know, stating based on the information provided, if we fail to get financing from a lending institution, all monies are returned to the prospective buyer. I mean, you have to have a backout clause in there or else you're going to be in a hiccup because you'll lose your earnest money deposits.
Okay, so do we put in, like, what paperwork do we use? Do we put in the LOI with our paperwork?
Yeah.
Like, we submit it? Okay. And do we use the RE Mentor LOI, or do we need a lawyer to draft it for us?
No, you can use one of ours, but make sure it has a backout clause. I like the, there's a couple up on the mentorship website, but there's also ones that I can send you. If you give me your email address, I'll send you the ones that I like to send my guys.
Oh, that would be great, Jeannie. And do you want me to give you my email address now or just email
yep.
you?
No, you can give it to me now. It doesn't matter.
Okay, great. It's HLH Real Estate at gmail.com.
Okay, Heather. And I'll send you over three. And but make sure that you use the Danya property backout clause because that's pretty fine tuned into what you're looking for.
That's wonderful. Can I ask another question, Jeannie?
Sure.
Is it okay?
Oh,
okay,
oh can right. I? This is Jeff.
Oh,
can
hi,
I
Jeff.
Just add a couple things to that? Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. So, try to get. Do you have the address of the property?
I don't.
All right. Ask the broker to send you the address. With 16 units,
okay.
They may not have like great financials. But if you can have get the address right, then you can look up the county that it's in, so then you'll have an idea of what you're paying for taxes, or you call down to the tax assessor's office and ask about a property that's close by. If you Google the address and look for apartments,
uh-huh.
you might be able to find something within that range. Then call down to the tax assessor's office and find out how much the taxes are going for or what the equation is for calculating the taxes on it. And then is this in your local market or is it in a different market?
It's an emerging market. Yeah.
Okay, so you can't drive to it. So.
No, I can't.
So, then I would call a couple of property management companies in that area, see who does 16 units. So then you have a pretty. Do you know what age the property is?
No. They. My broker said that it was recently renovated.
Okay.
But I don't know the age of the original construction or the extent of the renos even.
Okay, so if you don't know, so get the address and the number of units from him, and then you can call some property management companies in that area to see what they're charging. Because you have the 9 operating expenses, so you want to bang out a few of these. Then ask them if they can refer an insurance broker in that area, and then like try to get some.
Okay.
Some of the insurance, and those are like the taxes and the insurance. Those are like your, they're like the uncontrollable. So they're pretty much market specific. So you're gonna have to do this research anyways on it. And,
right.
So the taxes address with a PM. Then ask him how much. Well, he said it's renovated, so maybe the iron, the repair and maintenance won't be too high on it when you take it over. But I'd check that out. And then you can figure out if it's a good area or not. Have you done any market research knowing where the B and C areas are?
That's we have our indicator. We don't have the address yet, so we can't look.
Oh,
at
you have our indicator. Great. Put the address in there.
Yes.
I'll tell you what type
yes.
of neighborhood it is. Awesome.
They
yeah.
don't have
then,
the address yet. That's the key. They have
what's
the
that?
Address. You don't
yeah,
have,
we don't
the
have
address
an address
yet.
Yeah, but when she gets it, right, because then you can talk to the management company and say, hey, it's in a B area or a C area, then they'll tell you what they charge for that.
Yeah. We also know it's in an area that we've been wanting to look at because there's a big development center going in there, and so it's sort
nice.
Of like the area that we've been looking to get into. So I think that part, I mean, our broker knows us pretty well at this point, so he knows what we're looking for, but he did say this is something that we were like, okay, but we have no idea. So the broker says that the deal won't close until mid-2018 because the people who are selling this are trying to develop the land around it because they want to put in because this is a developing area because of the center that's going in. So I'm guessing they probably were going to – I don't know what the deal is or why they don't want to close until mid-2018, but he said we can lock in a price now because it's going to move fast. So I wanted to know your opinions on that.
I think they always say that.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, good. So that doesn't scare you guys away.
No.
Okay. And then in the purchase agreement line on the LOI, it says that to agree to try to execute a purchase agreement within 10 days of the LOI. But I don't really know what that means. I mean, these guys are saying we wouldn't actually be buying it until mid-2018. So what do we do with that?
Well, I mean, you can't do anything till you get financials.
Right. Okay. So, but
well,
then, okay.
Something you want to live with. I mean, there might be some hiccups there that you're not even interested in. In the property any longer because of those hiccups.
Okay. But hypothetically speaking, if they sent us the financials tomorrow, and it's something we're interested in putting an LOI in on. Do we just put that 10 days? Do we stick with the 10 days even though, I mean, we wouldn't actually, they have already said that the time frame is going to be, you know, kind of out in the distance a little bit.
So if it's way out there, then, well, you're going to get a lawyer anyways to look at the purchase and sale that has a real estate background. So, like, you're going to, like, you'll have to, your contingencies will have to, you talk to your lawyer, right? But they have to, whatever your closing date is, I would give I wouldn't have those contingencies expire until, like, maybe, like, 45 or 60 days off of that date, of that closing date, because you never know what might happen, right? What if a crime happens at that property and everyone moves out? Then all your financials go, and your lender won't lend on something that, like, everyone moves out of. So there's a lot of risk, like, giving up your contingencies, you know, and, like,
okay,
a real estate attorney would be able to draft up that part of the purchase sale for you.
So we don't have a real estate attorney. Is that something that we need to just find one ASAP, or I don't know. I don't know how to go about doing that, but I could Google
somebody.
Let's
take
the
property
state.
In.
Yeah.
Sorry?
What state is the property in?
It's in Florida.
Well, we know a lot of people, so you can just call us, and we'll help you with that part of it.
Listen, I appreciate so much you letting me ask so many questions. I didn't mean to monopolize the time. But thank you so much. We're kind of nervous and just needed a few questions answered. So thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Thanks. Have a great holiday, both of you.
You
yeah,
too.
You
thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, up next we have Alan. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, guys. This is Alan. I have a couple of questions on the underwriting template and one not another question not depending on the underwriting template. So, Jeff, I was in your immersion class in November with my wife and son. So the closing cost, the 3%, the 3% is the – I know it's a rule of thumb of 3%. What if the property price is, you know, over 20 million, would that increase, or we always take that 3% as a rule of thumb?
Yeah, 3%. Yeah.
And 1% for loan points. You always use those figures no matter how large the property is.
Okay. What about the syndication fee? Does it matter if it's a small unit or it's a large unit? Do they always charge this $15,000, or can you just let me know how that works?
Well, if it's a small property, you may not even have to syndicate it. You can do a partnership. Somebody brings in the money, and you
mm-hmm.
work the deal, and you do a 50-50 split. And that's on a smaller deal. If it's a property that you're raising, you know, a lot of money on, then you're going to syndicate it. And the syndication fees are based on the attorney's work, what they're doing for you. We recommend several syndication attorneys. Kim Taylor is one of them, and she does a very good job. There's multiple other syndication attorneys, and their fees could change drastically. So it's
right.
What you're working with.
Exactly. So that was my question too. So if this is a large deal and I need to syndicate this, what number do I put in the underwriting template before I go ahead with the LOI?
Well, you're not putting it in the underwriting. You're putting it in your property package, and it's going to come in as closing costs other if you want it on your underwriting. So I would just use a rule of thumb of $20,000 in your closing costs other, along with your CapEx reserves and whatever work needed to be done on the property. But when you do your property package, you're going to raise that money from your investors.
Right, right. No, that's,
you might have to outlay the money, but the investors are ultimately the people that are paying it.
Okay, Alan, this is Jermaine.
Okay,
I want to ask you a quick question. Are you referring to the syndicate, the cost for a syndication lawyer, or are you referring to the percentage of an acquisition fee? Because I think that's what it can be.
No. The cost of the syndication lawyer.
Okay. All right.
Right. Thank you, sir. The other question I had was the closing cost. On the template, there was section closing cost other, and it says capital improvements reserved for 6 months. What is the difference between the capital improvement and capital expenditure? Aren't they the same?
Well, the bank might come in when they go to look at giving you a mortgage, and they might have a list of items they want you to complete within the first year. That is where you're going to put your closing costs other, because you may not have the money to get the work done, and without doing the work, you can't get your CapEx money replaced. So, you know, if they tell you they want, you know, laminate flooring or granite
mm-hmm.
countertops, or they want the fascia board taken care of, or they want paint or new windows, something that is going to be out of the ordinary, you have to have the
mm-hmm.
money available to do the work. And that's why you put closing costs other in your template. You also want to use a good rule of thumb is a year of CapEx as well as a couple of months of operating expenses to make sure there's no hiccups when running the property. Because when you take over, there could be some people that leave because it's under new ownership and they know they're going to have an increase in rent. Could be any number
mm-hmm.
of reasons, but you want to have money available so
okay.
that you can do the work.
Sounds good. Thank you. So what about the when, so let's say we keep this property for 3 years and then, you know, we want to engage a realtor, right, and a real estate agent to sell this. How do you calculate that cost, that cost within this underwriting template? Do I need to add that factor now or wait until we sell the property?
Well, it's going to be factored in on your property package, and it's going to be paid for out of the proceeds of the property. It's the cost of doing business.
Right. So you don't do that in the beginning. That's my question.
No, you do.
Okay, got it. Okay, and my last question, guys, is, you know, I was talking to an investor, and one of the things that he brought up, which it totally frazzled me, he says, okay, you know, Alan, what happens when, you know, I know you have an LLC, what happens if you die tomorrow, what's going to happen to that property or the whole infrastructure? And honestly, I didn't know how to answer him. So, have you guys encountered this type of a question when they ask?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know you, so forgive me, but if you need a sponsor to qualify you for the mortgage, the sponsor
mm-hmm.
is the person that's on the hook. You won't be talking to any banker or anything like that unless you can co-sponsor or sponsor the deal by yourself.
Okay, so thank you for that. But
how example,
do you,
Jeannie, of like,
you know,
because I know it's like it's all in like all that language is in the offer and memorandum. Can't talk yet. So it tells you everything that happens, like if the owner passes away or whatever happens to ownership.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And stuff like that. It's like all in that language. Do we have one, Jeannie, that we could send to him?
I can send that to you if you want to give me your email address. I will send that to you, an operating agreement
sure.
of the property. But truthfully,
that would be it.
When you create an LLC, you and your sponsor are going to be part of that LLC. If
mm-hmm.
you're buying
mm-hmm.
properties for $3 million and you need to qualify for $2.4 million, can you do it by yourself?
No, I can't. No, I will be using
definitely
a sponsor.
You need a sponsor. So the sponsor
right.
is literally the person on the hook here, not you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay.
And
I will send over.
May I ask you to, right, can you also send me those LOIs too so I can look at it the same thing that you're going to send to Heather?
They're up on the mentorship site. They're up there. But I will send you the three that I use.
Go up to the conference.
Okay, thank you.
The best one that's up there is called, the one that's called Tory Case Study. It's a really good one. It spells out what you're going to need for financials in the letter of intent. So, like, if you're working with a broker or someone, like, by using that one, it looks like, yeah, you need the financials, and you do need the financials to evaluate the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you need it for your lender, too. But it pretty much spells out, like, 8 different things that you're going to need right away. So the Tory case study is really good. I mean, it's the LOI.
Excellent. Thank
it's
you.
It's, like, making offers,
okay.
and it's, like, around, like, 23 or 24, one of those conferences up there.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, just my last question. I apologize. Do we have anything on the site for the pro forma do some kind of analysis for the 3 years or 5 years, a template?
Yeah, it's up in the syndication compensate. It's up there. There's a 5 year
syndication. Okay, got it. Thank you. I'm all set. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Got
okay.
a break. All right. Jermaine's going to tell us exactly where those competencies are, right? Just hold on. And you'll be all set. And actually, right, that's where there's a couple offer. There's an offer memorandum example up there in that syndication. So just go up there.
So it's actually competency 13. So just to give you that, Jeff.
For what?
If you're looking for the 5-year performer template,
okay.
that's competency 13.
Here's a question from Ivan Pierce. I was wondering if you guys had a list of properties that show that we have the experience to purchase and manage a property. Does Dave have any list like that? Well, A, yes, we do, but B, that is not unless we're in the deal with you would we provide something like that. So if you're going out to work on a property, you have to go on your own merit or on the merit of your sponsor. So it's not the deals that we've closed. It's the deals that you have closed or your sponsor has closed that is going to warrant that you have the experience. Sorry, Ivan, that we don't do that. I have a whole slew of questions from Alan Babruti, but I guess he just asked most of them. So that's not something I'm going to go through. And here's another one from Robert Wynn. What is the best LOI to use? The reason I am asking, because we got one in our USB key with the home study course and at the boot camp, and now there are a couple LOIs onto the mentorship site. They are all good LOIs. Just I caution you, make sure you have a back out clause for financing so that you can protect yourself. Other than that, you can use any of the ones that you see on our sites. They are all good.
Right on.
Operator, do we have any other questions?
No, Jeannie, there are no questions at the moment.
Okay. Michael McGee asks, when is the best time to use a seller carry back on a property? Well, any time you can get help with the down payment would be great. So if you can get a seller to carry back some of the down payment on the property at a low interest rate for a year or so until you get it stabilized. That's really a good deal. Or sometimes the seller will stay on the loan for a period of time until you get the property cash flowing, and then you cash him out totally. But in any event, you're always going to have help with the down payment if you do a carry back. But you can't do the whole loan carry back. Most banks will not allow that. So you got to caution yourself that you will be raising money. This is from Phil DeMarco. This is an unusual question. Is there anything I need to add to my credibility kit? Well, if I saw your credibility kit, I could let you know. But, I mean, I don't see it. I don't know anything about your credibility kit. I don't know what your strengths are or your weaknesses. So if you want to send it my way or Jermaine's way, we'll be happy to look at it. My email is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-I-E, at rementor.com. And Jermaine's is J. Evans, E-V-A-N-S, at rementor.com. Both of us will take a look at it and let you know if we think you should add something to it. And the fact that you're asking us this means that you're unsure if you've done it right. So we'll be happy to take a look at it. This question is from Rena Mendez. Do foreign investors need to pay income tax on the returns they receive from a real estate investment? Wow, that's an interesting question because they are going to get a K-1 at the end of the year, which is much like a 1099 form, which shows them the cash flow they've received as well as the depreciation on the property, and somebody is going to pay taxes on that. Now, the big question here is not are they going to pay the United States taxes, it's are they going to be double taxed from their home country and from the profits they received here? That is the real question. So somehow, some way, those taxes are going to be paid, and it should be paid by them. Anybody want to add anything? I feel like I'm doing all the talking, guys.
No.
Jeannie,
you are doing a fantastic job.
You guys are bailing on me. Okay.
We like to respond to live calls.
Well, we don't have any, so I'm doing this.
Okay.
Jeannie, we have one.
Okay. Thank you, Lillian.
Okay. Up next, we have Angela. Angela, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jeff and Jermaine. This is Angela from Boston.
How are you?
Happy holidays.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Are you guys doing well?
Yes, we're doing very good. I get all your advertisements.
How's Mark doing?
Oh, it's doing good. I'm doing the call today, and I have a couple questions on the property that we just finished inspection last week. It's a 40 unit in the Atlanta submarket.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my questions are, I have a couple of them. I'll try to make it short. My major question is that the seller has really, really poor records. And so we're trying to reconstruct some of the P&Ls from the bank, his bank statements, but he commingles everything in the bank statement, which is under the property's name. He commingles his personal funds and his other rental properties, single families in there. So I'm trying to extract information that's been really difficult. So what I had asked the broker to get is probably a tax return from his for this property if it's separate. If it's not separate, I'm asking for a Schedule E of his 1040. So what else do you think I should do in terms of try to get the financial together? We are working with Eric Stewart, by the way, mm-hmm. On this deal.
Well, Eric's going to tell you exactly what he wants you to see.
Yes. Right now we're putting to get. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's all right, Angela. By the way, how did Billy like the Wilson conference?
Oh, we didn't go there. Billy,
oh, you're
probably confusing me with Jenny.
Oh, yeah.
Billy,
Jenny Zhang, yeah.
Billy went.
Yep, I am.
Yep.
Sorry, because I know Billy went.
That's okay.
You're with Mark. I got it now.
Right.
Yeah. Same last
so,
name. What can I say?
Yeah. So, Angela, you're going to have to get bank statements, okay? And then he's going to have to, I'm sure Eric might have mentioned it to you, he's going to have to start making regular deposits, rent deposits, as they go through the closing, because the lender's going to need that. So he's going to have to reorganize how he's doing things and have a dedicated account where you're making deposits. And you want to look at the financial due diligence and look at some of the items there that you need from the, because the financial due diligence is what's going to is your check for the T-12s, right? So if you ask for some utility bills, let's see, what else would we need? Utility bills. You can get some tax bills just to check. If he's done any repairs, right? Ask him for some receipts on what they did. If he has any CapEx items.
Yes.
If you can get any
receipts. Yeah, we asked for all of that. We got the tax returns, the tax records from the tax office, and we asked for the utility. We go down your due diligence checklist that indicates in the master website. And even the utility bills, he has given us some, the water bill and the electricity bill. But in terms of everything else, the deposits that's in the bank statement, it's just all says counter credits. There is no deposit slips provided, and he just basically commingles everything in this account. So, and it's being not very cooperative. So I'm having a little trouble here, even though I'm trying to make the best out of what we had. He did provide a year-to-date November P&L all in one, not by month. So we're trying to break it down by month, as the lender will need a trailing 12. So
do you have any rent
I'm
rolls?
Just wondering if there's any other other way we
rolls?
Could get.
Does he have any rent rolls?
He has a rent roll, but it's not matching up with the lease audit that we did. So that's another thing that we have to work on.
But you got a rent roll for the last 12 months, right? That's going to give you your trend on your occupancy. But if it's not matching up, that's not good. But ask him for the rent rolls for the last 12 months. Then you can see where your gross scheduled rent is. You can see who's paying. Does he have a clean rent roll, or is it just Excel? He's just making up rent rolls, or do you think he has
It is an Excel. So you're saying I should ask the rent roll by month, that way I can compare.
Yeah, so the last 12 months.
What's the ins and outs?
You can see how it's going. You can see if you have long-term tenants. You can ask him what's working for marketing in that area. Does he have any bills? What he's spending for marketing, then you can figure out how much the marketing costs on it.
Yeah, we did all of that with
Does
the help
have any
of
contracts,
the next door comps and across the street, as well as the property management. So, okay, I'll try to do my best to come up with something. Also, on the bank statement, we noticed he has checks that he cut checks to pay his tenants. So we were a little suspicious of what that is. Could be some work that the tenant, maybe handyman work, but I don't know whether that he was trying to have a rent kickback in order to raise the rent revenue. So all these questions that we have written down and forwarded to the seller's broker to get answers on.
Wow, it's sometimes you have to rebuild it. It does take time, but if it's a
How does the property look?
It probably looked really good. The numbers, at least if the numbers are accurate, he was given to us. So we're hopeful. There are quite a lot of deferred maintenances. So the initial CapEx that we came up with, about $300,000, is likely to rise to $350,000 or $375,000, so under $400,000. But even with that, the property, we're trying to get this CapEx financed in the loan that Erica's working with us on that. So there's also about a $1.3 million free airport mitigation program for brand new doors and the windows and the roof fence insulations that we're going to take advantage of.
You have an accounting background, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so this should be a piece of cake for you.
I know. Even that, I'm having a little trouble. That's why I just thought I'll get some more ideas, because it's a mess. It's really, there was nothing that was traceable or I can substantiate from all of the place. But I'm going to work on that. So my last question is, I heard part of the CapEx discussion you had with a previous caller. Jeannie, you said that the lender will escrow some CapEx reserve. Is that in addition to what our CapEx budget, the $300,000, $400,000, that we come up with?
Yeah. I mean, if they come out there and what your CapEx that you're setting aside to hold for the year, the lender's going to tell you whether it's enough or not. So if you're putting in, it's typically $300 a door, and you have to go for the whole year, but the lender might come out and they might see something that you neglected to see, or maybe you saw it and said, we're not going to do it this year, but we'll do it next year, and they may give you a six-month window to get it done, because they want it done. Remember, they're protecting their investment, not really you. They're protecting themselves. Okay. So you have to have the money to get that fixed, unless you can just go to your bank account and get it. But most normal people can't do that.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll consider in the additional raise.
Yeah. Yeah, you raise that from your investors, because you got to have the money in there if the bank tells you, and then they're only going to give you a year to get it fixed, and then you'll submit your receipts to them. They'll send an inspector out to look at the property, and they'll sign off on it, and then they'll cut you a check back. But if you don't have the money in the first place, you're not going to be able to get the work done. Then you're going to make a capital call to the investors. It just gets ugly.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Can I ask one more question, then I'll hang up?
No problem. You can ask anything you want.
Okay. So right now we have two quotes from the Alta survey, and so that's something that we have to do after the after we apply for the loan, right?
Yep.
And what about the insurance? Do I start to work on the insurance quotes now? And when does that piece kick in?
Well, first off, you got to make sure that what they're paying right now is accurate. And you can call the insurance company and find out what the last insurance bills were for the property for the year. Because, you know, taxes may be reassessed. That's another thing. You should be calling the tax department and find out the last time the taxes were assessed on the property, because they reassess every 5 years. And if it's been more than 5 years, then you're probably going to have an uptake in your taxes.
Right. Okay. So I need to get the name of the insurance company from the seller.
Yep.
Okay. And if I have new insurance company that I want to use, I should give this information on the last 2 years of claims to any to the new insurance company, and when that's going to be done. Is this done after we initiate the apply for the loan?
Oh, yeah. But you still want to be prepared to make sure that you're setting aside a certain amount of money for insurance. I mean, if it's near the water, it's going to be higher. Sometimes they put insurance figures down. I mean, I see it in our students, and they go by the strict rule of thumb of $250 a door, but it's not so. And yesterday I analyzed the property based on actuals, and the insurance was more money than the taxes. And it was all based on actuals. So you got to make sure that you're covering yourself, that you've got enough money in the little boxes to make sure you can close the property and get insurance. But if you haven't raised enough money to cover these costs, it's going to come out of the money that comes in, and the investors are going to get a lower rate of return, and you're going to make an ugly start to a good property.
All right. Thank you for all the advices. Really appreciate it.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Have
a happy holiday with everyone.
Angela, hold on a second, okay? So locate an insurance broker in that market. Just call up around, right? Have them run a clue report for you. It's $45, and it's going to tell you all the claims against that property. So make sure you do that. Do you have that property under contract right now?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It is on the contract. You said a clue report?
Yeah. It's all the claims. It's a claims history. C-L-U.
Oh, claims history.
E.
Okay.
Yeah. Have them do that, right? Then you'll see what type of claims are against that property. Also, have you been interviewing property management companies about the property?
Yes, we already decided on one.
All right. Have they done a drive-by on the property yet?
Yeah, we already finished the inspection, yes.
So they gave you their take on deferred maintenance on the property and CapEx?
Yeah, they give us an idea of how much it costs, yeah.
Oh, so you know what to carry for
you. You're ahead of the game.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes, we are a little bit ahead on certain areas, a little bit behind in the others. So.
Nice.
We're trying to... Yeah, okay. So, all right. So I will talk to the insurance broker. We have two lined up. I just haven't go forward with them yet. And then we'll try to line everything up.
All right. So exciting, huh?
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. A little bit nervous, but we have you guys. So.
Yep.
That's right. You do
okay.
Have us.
Thank you.
All right. Happy holidays. Hope we hear from you soon.
Yep.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, up next we have Chris. Chris, please go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Good.
Good. Hey, I had a couple of questions that just... first one is on the other closing costs. And say renovation fees. Those, what I've heard is, and you can only put 3% in at the time of closing for to take money back of the sale, right?
Come again? Say that again?
Yeah, you can.
When you're at closing,
on a property, right? On your offer, on your letter of intent, and it's in there, right? 3% of close, 3% repair allowance. That's what the bank allows.
Yep.
So you'll have you can put that in on your letter of intent. So then, if whatever the difference is, it would go in closing costs other. If you need like 4%,
right,
then that other 1% would go into the closing costs other.
Yeah, but you got to make sure the seller agrees to that.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens? Let's just say like we decide that we were trying to raise an additional. Say $300,000 to renovate all the units over the next 3 years, but we want to get that money up front for our investors. I want to account for that in the underwriting, so I would put that in the other cost. But at time of closing, that's not going to appear at the closing. Are we just, do we just make that part of our raise and put that into a separate account, and it's just kind of invisible behind the scenes? Is that right or potentially correct? You know what I'm, you guys following me?
Yeah, but I always put it in closing costs other, because it's the money you're going to raise from the investors.
Right. In the underwriting,
if you want to raise an added $300,000 on top of CapEx, on top of repairs that the bank's telling you to do, on top of anything remotely, it all goes into closing costs other.
Right. Okay. So, that's how I've been doing it. I just got a little, sideways.
Paranoid.
The things that
you got a little
paranoid. Yeah, a little bit. I want to make sure, I don't got to cross the T's, right?
Yeah.
And then my other question is real simple. I don't know if you have any, but, in the last deal, we kind of fell apart just placing it. The seller didn't want to come down a little bit. But we started talking about seller financing and being a little bit creative. And honestly, my head just started swimming. And a couple of the guys that I work with kind of get it. But my question is, do you have any examples where you've done some seller back financing and you have, how that played out and what it looks like on paper? Just so that that's how I learned. And I'm just trying to think, if I could see it, then it would make more sense to me. I get, a seller wanting to be able to save some money being, tax-wise, not taking as much money out of the deal so he stays into it. But I don't see any, it just doesn't make sense why I would want to stay into a deal that I'm trying to sell. You know what I mean? I'll try to put myself in the seller's shoes.
Well, But Chris, he could only be staying in the deal because he's afraid it's not going to close unless he does a carry back. So maybe what he's pricing the property out at may be unrealistic in the long run because.
Yeah, that never happened. Right. And that's kind of what the situation is, that the pricing is unrealistic. And so we brought him to, tried to bring him back to reality, but, he's still in a little different space. So I was just kind of curious, like I said, if you had anything that I could see the seller financing and how it looks, because it just makes no sense to me. People talk about it all the time, and I'm like, I just feel like, it's just a part that I don't have familiarity with, and I'd like to have be able to speak to some brokers intelligently about that if it comes up again.
I'll have to look through and see what I have.
Yeah, because my partner...
Somebody that's listening may have done a seller carryback property where they only had to raise 10% instead of the 20%. So ask that question to everyone, not just to me or Jeff or Jermaine.
All right. Okay. I think you just did, so whatever Jeannie just said, could you guys, if you have any examples, do you want me to?
Fine. We said it. You can send it to me, Jeannie at Ari Mentor, and I'll farm it out to Chris.
That would be awesome. So thanks. I appreciate your time, and you guys have a great day, and enjoy the holidays if we don't talk.
Merry Christmas.
You too. Happy holidays.
You too. Yeah.
Okay, up next we have Gene. Gene, please go ahead.
Hey, hello everybody. This is Gene. Jermaine, thanks for giving me the code to get on. I've been trying to bounce off the walls here to get on the call. How you doing, Gene, Jeannie, and Jeff? I have a situation here. Try to be very quick. I live in D.C. and I'm investing in Baltimore. And I'm meeting with an owner tomorrow on a 50 unit. It's a 50 portfolio deal that he has. So these are row homes in Baltimore. First of all, is that something that you would recommend or doing, not doing, as a buying in as a portfolio deal?
That's fine, but we don't buy in Baltimore because up until recently they had absolutely no zoning. Now they're trying to get some parcels zoned, but we don't buy there because of the no zoning thing.
Okay.
But if you can find a good deal on townhomes that are selling, I don't see why not.
Okay. Yeah, I've been buying, personally, I've bought like 10 properties in Baltimore, so I'm very familiar with the area, and I know what you mean about the neighborhoods, zone, block by block, and zoning and all that. So, I mean, the numbers themselves look pretty good, and I guess that was one. And then on the LOI, if you could please also include me on that.
I already sent them out. I will do that now.
Okay. Awesome.
What is your email?
It's Jean, J-E-A-N, G as in George, Nicholas, N-I-C-O-L-A-S, at gmail.com. So Jean, G, Nicholas, no H,
okay.
N-I, at gmail.com. Thank you. And then this part.
Let me
part,
just add one thing, right? Jermaine, can you look up what that LOI is? What everyone wants to do that's on the call about the letter of intent, you want to go up to this conference that Jermaine's going to find because there's an audio that goes with it, and Dave explains each paragraph. So just go up to the site. It's going to be like the same one that Jeannie sends out, but just go up and download it.
Jeff, it's incompetency number 17.
Okay.
Number 17,
It's called Tory, all right? It's,
yep.
Just go up there and listen to that audio, then you'll be able to explain the letter of intent, too.
Excellent. I don't even have a mentor yet. I'm waiting for that. So, a coach, that is. So, I'm, like, nervous because I'm meeting with the guy tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you have your student data form in?
Yes, I had it, I think, a couple weeks ago, so a week or two. And then if you don't mind, the other question I had, I think we'll address Chris's point, is structuring the deal. I had met an investor before when I was buying the 10 properties, and I was able to get him to sign my own version of an LOI where he was willing to carry 10% on the deal. In this situation, you know, it's 50 units, roughly about 50 properties, roughly about 50 per door on average. So we're looking at about $2-3 million. I guess going in to talk to him tomorrow, I want to get an idea because I am going to try to do a partnership with just me and my friend. So I would like to see, like, get some thoughts on how I should approach the owner to see if he's willing to do a owner financing. The reason I say that is because he doesn't want to sell the property himself. It's a partnership, and his partner has cancer, and it's his partner that wants to unload. So I'm thinking maybe if I can pay his partner's side of it off and maybe get him to carry. So I just wanted to hear what some thoughts on that.
Sounds good. By the way, your coach is Craig.
Craig, and, awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we'll reach out to him and see if he's available to call you.
Okay. Okay. Any suggestions on how I should approach him to do a sell or carry?
Well, I would do two sets of underwriting, one with him carrying and one with him not carrying, and then I would do two LOIs. One, you know, just give him two different versions and see which one he chooses. He may be more than happy to be on the loan with you or keep the loan in his name. You don't know who signed for the loan, so... He may be more than willing to keep the loan. Then you don't have to raise that much money. His partner gets cashed out with your down payment, and he can stay in the deal with you guys.
Okay.
You run it, and say in a year or two's time, you can cash him out.
Okay, perfect. So just showing two scenarios, one with fully cashed out, one with him staying on the loan.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Okay.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
All right, so we're
Hold on a second, right? If you go up to Conference C13, Creative Financing, right, there's an audio on creative finance and three types of offers. The three types of offers you can put on smaller units, how you approach sellers on carrying back a second mortgage, loan assumptions, lease options, secondary finance, and hard money. So it's a call. Just go up to that, go up there, and listen to Dave explain how to do it.
I was going to tell everybody we're having an ugly sweater day on Friday, and we're all 33 of us are making our favorite cookies to bring in and swap around. So I happen to be making Scandinavian walnut cookies, and I'm going to make some toffee candies, too. I decided that today.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say, too, right? Dave said he's running out of chocolate. So if anyone wants to send Dave any chocolate.
He likes dark chocolate, just so you know. He likes dark chocolate. So you can send it right here to the company with his name on it. He opens
it. No, put my name on it.
Don't put Jeff's on there. Put Dave's.
Is that it?
So Manny wants to ask a question. Lillian, can you tell Manny how to ask a question?
Press star zero for questions, please. Thank you.
Is that pound zero?
No, it's star zero. The star sign and a zero. And Lillian will take the call in. Manny Martinez wants to ask a call. A question. He's brand new.
Jeannie, are you making your gravy for the holiday party we're having on the 22nd?
I am.
Thank
Jeannie
God.
Initiated
nice.
Me. But
oh,
I'm going to cook
nice.
It at home. I'm going to put it in my crock pot with gravy, and I'm going to bring French bread in already pre-sliced, and everybody can make hot turkey sandwiches.
All right. So I can bring me a...
Froze, right? Did you freeze it, like, from Thanksgiving, or is it going to be fresh?
It will be fresh. I don't need leftovers. There
I'm
going to
bring
no
me a container in for
food.
The gravy.
Okay. Jermaine, I taught you how to make it.
Ah, it's better if you make it.
You make it so good, Jeannie.
Thank you, guys. Someday I'll make my beef gravy.
Okay,
go
we
ahead,
have
Sue.
Manny on the line. Manny, please
hi,
go ahead.
Hi, Manny. Figured it out, huh?
Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Good.
So my question is, how do we network with potential sponsors so we can start building those relationships before we find a deal?
Well, the first thing you want to do is figure out the kinds of deals in the areas that you want to invest in. And then you want to go through your little Rolodex or your mind and figure out who you really want to work with before you reach out to a sponsor you don't know. Find out who wants to make more money. You do the lion's share of the work, but they use their net worth to get you that nice low interest rate, and they're the signers on the note. So that's what I would suggest first. Other than that, you can call me offline and we can talk about what areas you're going to invest in and who I have in that area. Okay?
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else, operator?
No, Jeannie, we have no further questions.
Okay, I can keep reading questions, but as Jeff says, it gets very boring. So what we're going to do is we're going to end the call today with happy holidays to all of you. I'm sure Dave will be on the line next week. And you get a little reprieve from me for 2 weeks. Isn't that great? So happy holidays, everyone.
Have a happy holiday.
Holidays. And chocolate.
He said...